Hey everybody, welcome to Gaming My Whole Life. This is episode number 9, and today we have Jamel joining me once again for a bit of one-on-one. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing good, actually. It's nice to have you all to myself again. Happy to be here.
Likewise, good to have you. You know, original and the best, as they say. Now, before we get into today's topics, just want to give a little bit of a shout out to a winner of a competition. From everyone here at Gaming My Whole Life, congratulations, Jennifer, for winning the competition which we posted on our Facebook group, Positive Gaming Space. The competition was pretty simple. Yeah, Jamel, give a shout out to Jennifer. Woo!
Well done, Jennifer.
Congratulations, Jennifer is the winner of a $50 Steam AUD card. So Australian dollars, doesn't matter where you are in the world though, we'll make sure you get it. And the competition was really simple. She's an active member of our community on Positive Gaming Space. Competition was just share a post that we posted and just give us a couple kind words. Jennifer did that, that's all it took. She did that less than a week ago. And yeah, today sent her a PM saying, give us your details and you will get $50. It took no effort. So yeah, thanks for being a fan. Now, moving on to the topic of today, you've probably seen this flowing about the internet, buddy. But just in case you haven't, naturally, before we have spoken about the microtransactions and EA and Ubisoft and DLCs and all of that sort of thing, Well, it seems the American Ratings Board, ESRB, has actually been listening. And actually, just let me make sure, did I even say that name? ESRB, yeah, the Entertainment Software Rating Board. They're the guys who, you know, when you go and you buy a game, you look at the back of the cover and it tells you, you know, who it's age appropriate for. So GTA, with all the, you know, killing and running people over, you'll see an MA 15 plus or an 18 plus sticker on there. Whereas a Mario game, you will have an E for everyone, meaning everyone can play it. Now, what these guys have will be introducing in the very near future, in April, I believe, if memory serves me correct, they will be adding an extra sticker, and this sticker is to warn parents, or anyone who simply doesn't know different, if a game will consist of any additional purchases within the game itself. So, you buy a game for $50, $100, $60, whatever it is, obviously varies with each country. You buy it, you go home, you start playing, and it's become pretty common practice these days to either later on get some DLC, or unfortunately, have a day one DLC or microtransactions. Now, this has garnered enough attention from the whole EA debate with, what was it, Battlefront? Star Wars Battlefront? Or Battlefield?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it was Battlefront.
Battlefront, yep, thank you. And yeah, people were obviously upset with that for the microtransactions. But yeah, this sticker will just say, hey, this game includes in-game purchases. The thing with those, it's a very broad sticker. It's not actually specifically referring to microtransactions. It's just any purchase. So even if a game comes out complete and in 6 months' time, they plan on, you know, just releasing a DLC or expansion of some sort, it will get that sticker. So, in effect, pretty much every game will get that sticker, and that's what we wanted to talk about today, if that sticker is actually enough, if it's a good thing, if we even need it. So, Jamel, if you could kick this off, buddy, what do you think about their attempt? Is this a good or bad thing? What are your thoughts, bro?
It's pretty pointless. I mean, it's not pointless insofar as advertising to people that, you know, after you buy this game, there's additional purchases. That's all well and good, but is that going to be effective? Is that going to be a deterrent? Is that going to lead to change in people's buying practices or their decision making as to which games they should be buying for their kids, or even adults who just don't want to buy DLC? It strikes me as something a bit of a paper tiger kind of compromise that like someone came up with in a committee versus you know, informed people making meaningful decisions about what can be done. It also makes me wonder about the role of the ESRB as to what powers they actually have, because this could be something, a change that they can institute that's actually within their scope. I don't think you're going to see a meaningful change until you see legislation come through, or people's, or the consumers' buying practices changing, because the problem with DLC is the benefit of DLC, is that people want their games to be supported after they purchase them. So they don't want developers to crank out a game, they buy it, and then there's no future support or further content. So this leads to a quandary for developers if, mm-hmm. say, let's say they pass legislation, right?
Yeah.
And they say, okay, you can't put out an incomplete game. It has to be complete. You have to have all of your content in the game. What happens then? Does that mean that gamers will... Oh, sorry, not gamers. Does that mean publishers will put out shorter games and then just treat the assets and everything and all that as a platform and then just release the next game using all that stuff, you know, 4, 5, 6 months later, you know?
I see what you mean. Like, I doubt anything like that would happen. This is just, you know, a bit of a warning to parents, but taking a step back and just focusing on what they're looking at, do you think it would actually help parents at all? Like, objective-wise, is to warn parents, hey, you buy this for little Jimmy. Jimmy might be still in your wallet later because he needs to buy microtransactions to stand a chance in the online community or whatever it is.
Little Jimmy.
Yes, yes. You see, somewhere out there, there's a kid and his name is Jimmy, and this is relevant. And if he's listening to this, his mind is being blown. I'm talking to you, Jimmy. Put back your mum's purse and stop using her card. It's because of you there's going to be stickers that may or may not actually do anything. But do you think it will actually proactively help, or do you think it will just be ignored, just like the fact parents already ignore, you know, ratings at the back of games anyway?
I to be honest, it's a bit of case by case, because some parents are actually onto it and pay attention to things. Other parents are just oblivious and don't care. Probably one of the biggest things it's going to accomplish is that the ESRB has created a website. I think it was parentaltools.org. It actually lists by case-by-case basis for each console, PC, Windows, and Google Play, how to actually turn on the parental controls. So... probably
parental controls on what? Like, what do you mean exactly? For consoles?
For consoles, basically, so that if you've got your credit card linked up to an account, you know, little Jimmy can't just buy a DLC and, you know, suddenly whack his parents with, like, $150 worth of DLC or something like that.
So they're planning on informing parents. That sounds good. Do you know if there's going to be any future action? Like, is this all they're going to do? Does everything end here? Or do they have, like, future plans in mind or something?
Well, apparently the ESRB have said that they're going... this is, like, the first part of a broader campaign.
Oh, you know, okay.
Yeah. They've made noises about, like, they're going to make some sort of, I guess, an information campaign, an awareness campaign, or something like that.
That actually sounds good. Like, this almost felt like a, you know... a minimum effort as required sort of thing. Like, yeah, people have, you know, kicked up a lot of fuss, will pretend to care, but I don't know, the fact that they've said, from what you tell me, Jamel, that, yeah, this is the first step of many, I'm really curious to see what those extra steps are, because if you are a parent and, you know, maybe you're not a gamer yourself, but, you know, your child is, and, you know, you shouldn't have to educate yourself, to be honest. Like, you're not interested, you know your kid likes games, you want to go and buy the game. So, I'm glad someone out there, some team is out there, as we speak, thinking, right, how do we let people know that this thing exists, and that incomplete games do exist as well, or games that simply come out with enough support that unfortunately are not free?
Yeah, I to be honest, like, something that would be that would actually work in my mind is that if in every game you had to have a leaflet that's like, say you buy a PlayStation 4 game, mm-hmm. when the person at the counter hands the game over to you, you know, they have to tell you, oh, here's the leaflet that tells you how to turn the parental controls on this system, you know. I honestly think it's going to take that kind of repeat notification and education for them to be like, you know, someone will have to say, yep, this game has additional purchases, so it's your responsibility to monitor them. Here's a leaflet that's going to go inside the, you know, the disc or the box or whatever you want to call it, to tell you how to turn the parental controls on, and make sure that there's, you know, kids aren't running around and being taken advantage of, like the people said. So that's the only way I see it working in my head.
Yeah. Like, personally, I see them ignoring that leaflet. But because they do say that it's the first step of many, you know, maybe in the country they'll have actual commercials, or just, you know, or maybe wherever you buy games, they'll be required by law to say, hey, just so you know, this game consists of in-game purchases, you know? So then even if you don't care, at least, you know, if they hear extra purchases, your ear would prick up, you know? It's like, yeah, what do you mean you want extra money?
Well, maybe they'll do things like where they'll have, like, interviews on radio shows and, like, morning television shows and articles in, like, the New York Times and the Washington Post and things like that. I mean, they could be planning some sort of media blitz thing, you know?
Yeah, that'd be cool.
And it could also become a thing of just where each time you purchase a game, parents have to be told, hey, you're responsible for regulating your child's spending on this platform. And, you know, I just think that if people get told that enough times, you know, you're always going to have your population, you know, segment of the population that ignores, you know, sensible warnings. But at a certain point, you sort of have to aim for the lowest common denominator and sort of just do your best, you know.
Yeah, you cut your losses. You try to do what you can. I understand what you're saying.
Yeah, and at a certain point, you know, there's only so much you can do to help some people. So
That's true.
Consumer side, I think that's the best they can do. Although I'm curious to hear your thoughts about what I was saying about how, say, if consumer trends in terms of spending, there was a backlash on incomplete games, like we were saying.
Mm-hmm.
How do you see the game industry responding to that?
So responding to what exactly? Sorry, I'm not grasping the question exactly.
Well, say, for example, consumers, like parents, kids, get bored of buying games that are incomplete, so not all of their content is ready on day dot when the game launches.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then they go, no, we don't want to pay money for these incomplete games anymore. You just got to put out the full game, or we aren't buying it.
Okay.
Basically,
yeah, that would be interesting. I think the industry firstly tries to get away with whatever they can. Obviously, it's a business, and it is all about making money, which I get. Like, even as the passionate gamers we are, we understand that money has to be made. Otherwise, the hundreds of millions of dollars that go into games, won't be a thing. That said, if the industry... I don't see... The gaming industry will never die. Like, it's a very evolving interactive art form that will just keep getting better and better. And if the industry is forced by the consumer, who's like, yeah, we're not interested with this, you know, games as a service or DLCs, like, we want to go back to the old days, you know? If you need to release games less often just so we can get the complete product, so be it. I think that the gaming industry would rise to that, would rise to that occasion. Like, I don't think developers and, you know, Konami and EA, they're just going to throw their hands up in the air and they're like, well, I'm going to go sell fishing boats. Like, they're going to stick to what they know, which is games. They just get away with what they can. And that being said, as much as I like to, you know, point out just how evil EA can be, and don't get me wrong, they can be very evil, at the same time, no one is forcing the people to buy the microtransactions and DLCs that they put in there. Like, is it a dodgy practice that, you know, they will do whatever it takes to encourage people to buy more stuff than they need? Yes, but you do have free will at the end. Mm. And, yeah, you know, if everyone all at once stopped buying the games, then, yeah, like, they would change. You would get full release games. Would they be any good? Who knows? Like, there's a lot of developers who this wouldn't affect, you know, or those big single player games, like, you know, of recent memory, Doom 2016, you know, that was a big complete game which got more features as it went on, but you got the main package, and pretty much every Nintendo game that ever comes out is a complete package. And you have Bethesda's a little bit of a hit and miss, but they do have big single player campaigns, so they would be able to survive in the industry. This is so hypothetical, though, that I don't see it ever happening, just because it has been proven that microtransactions, just any sort of in-game purchases, don't just add extra money to the developers. Don't even add a lot of extra money. The main income of a game these days is from microtransactions. So when EA releases a big mega blockbuster game, whatever, and they get a certain amount of, you know, sales, obviously they get money from it, but the result in microtransactions that follow is like 2, 3 to 10 times more than the original sale of the game. So that's where the money is, and unfortunately I don't see the industry changing. That said, vote with your wallets. You know, like, I was talking to some people on the group page, you know, Positive Gaming Space. This one guy, he put a comment, and, you know, I replied to him because I thought he was right on. He's like, because I was talking about the whole Konami thing, where Konami is charging that extra $10 for the save slot, you know. Yeah, I know, which is just an absolute joke. We'll save that for a totally different topic.
Episode.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, he said, you know, people, just vote with your wallets. Like, you don't want to support this, don't get the game. Or you want the game and you don't like the save file, don't, you know, pay for the save file. Which is, it's true. Like, developers listen to the wallet. Personally, I feel you need to take it a step further, though. Like, if a game has shoddy practices, I personally won't support the game at all. Mm. Like, I don't even want them to get the initial sale, even if I don't spend any more money. Because my gaming experience will be lesser, because everyone else around me who is willing to spend more money will have more of an advantage. And it's not even a I don't have enough money thing, or, you know, the rich kids, so to speak, have an advantage. It's if you've been gaming for as long as we have, we just recognize bad patterns, and we know that this is a bad pattern, and it will keep getting worse until we do something.
Mm. I don't think voting with your wallet is enough, though, because, I mean, companies like Konami...
It's a good place to start. Like, they're not going to do it, you know? They don't get money.
But I think there needs to be a backlash. There needs to be a lack of money and a backlash. Like, for example, with Capcom and Marvel vs. Capcom, you know, there was a backlash in terms of fans not wanting to buy the game because of the various problems they had with it. And then, you know, people being unhappy with the game, the art style, all that kind of thing. And then people didn't only just pay the game, but there was so much backlash about it to the point where, you know, people who might have maybe bought the game didn't because of the backlash. And then that leads to Evo not picking up Marvel vs. Capcom for the next Evo tournament, even though they're still playing, you know, Smash from years ago. But so
Evo for those of us listening to this podcast and don't actually know what you're talking about? What is Evo, buddy?
Evo is like one of the world's premier fighting game tournaments. And they, you know, it's so important for fighting games, their health, to for Evo to pick them up to be a game that they'll actually run a competition on. Because if Evo doesn't run the competition, you know, that that is a huge blow to fighting game developers. And if they do pick you up, it's a massive boon to you. For example, Arc System Works, who made Dragon Ball Z Fighters, or sorry, Dragon Ball Z Fighters.
Dragon Ball Fighters, yeah.
Yeah, they got their game, not only that game picked up, but some of their other games picked up as well instead of Marvel vs. Capcom. And that
so that's how you know they messed up. Like,
yeah,
the new kid on the block managed to get a seat,
yeah,
and Marvel vs. Capcom couldn't get in there.
Yeah,
okay.
And Capcom, the CEO of Capcom, had to release a letter to address that. You know, I mean, that's where if you don't have that kind of backlash, along with people not spending the money, that's where the message gets sent, in my opinion.
I think you are definitely in the right direction. I think every single bit of effort speaks to the developer. Like, even the post that I put on Facebook and, you know, has gone a little bit viral with everyone talking about what Konami did and all that. Yes, I understand the whole voting with your wallet. I support that. There's a whole bunch of games which I actually really wanted over the past few years, which I didn't buy because of shoddy practices. And I feel, in my own way, even that small post which I put out there, just people who didn't know about it now do know, and you educate yourself on it, and now they won't fall for it, you know? Because they could have potentially seen a trailer for this game, been like, oh, that looks interesting. Then they'll think of my post, and like, hang on, aren't these the dodgy people who, like, destroy the Metal Gear Solid series or something, and they're like, you know, I have like a brother or sister, and if they want their own save file, I have to pay an extra $10 for each one. So, yeah, like, you know, you mess up in the gaming industry, gamers talk, news outlets spread, and it goes the other way. When you do something good, like Zelda Breath of the Wild, I would have hated to actually have been a naysayer of Nintendo during the launch of it, because it was everywhere, you know? You do good, it's everywhere. You do bad, it's everywhere. But look, we've spoken about this topic for a little a little longer than I originally anticipated. But you know what? We're both passionate gamers. It's what we do, so that's fine. The next topic, and I'm going to steer this cruise ship into the Nintendo direction, because I have not spoken about them for a bit. And God help me, we just can't have that, can we, Jamil?
What happened?
You clock off there a bit, mate.
No, I'm completely across what's happening. Just repeat it for the audience, though, just in case they missed it.
Sure thing, mate, sure. I was just said that, you know, I haven't spoken about Nintendo for a while, and everyone who listens knows that that's something I do. And I do actually have some interesting news on them, and more specifically, the features that the Nintendo Switch brings. Now, everyone knows, or at least should know, that the Nintendo Switch does actually support motion controls.
Yes.
It isn't a forced feature like the original Wii did. If you, you know, go back into time into the Wii days, the introduction of motion control into gaming on a large social scale, global scale, I should say, is, you know, you had forced waggle-waggle controls. Every developer tried to use the controls, and very few did a good job with it. Now, the Switch's attitude towards it, with, as far as Nintendo's concerned, is like, hey, we have this awesome piece of tech. It does motion controls. We don't expect you to actually use it. Like, it's there, you know? If you think you can take advantage of it, go for your life. Otherwise, we're not forcing your hand. And the Doom Switch port, which, by the way, I've played it. I played it at PAX, and it just ran beautifully. Like, the fact that they managed to get that Doom 2016 experience onto that little Switch cartridge is just Panic Button. I believe that's the name of the developers who actually did the port. You know,
yeah.
The IP is owned by Bethesda now, but Panic Buttons is the talented studio who did the job. So good on them. And about a week and a half ago now, they released a nice patch for the Doom game on Switch. And apart from some general life improvements, better frame rate, this and that, they also added motion controls, part of it. And how you would control it is, so you have the Joy-Cons, right? Mm-hmm. You play them separately, so one in your left hand, one in your right.
Yeah.
And the Joy-Con in your right hand, you can use that to sort of like point at the screen and move around sort of like how you would with a mouse on the computer, or how you would play games, or how you played Metroid Prime on the Wii, if you ever got to experience that. And the feedback has actually been really positive from fans. Some even claiming that, you know, the controls are more precise with the motion controls. And I found that interesting because it isn't something which hasn't been pushed with the system. And my question is, can motion controls make a comeback with the Switch where it actually fits? Because, like I said, it's not a forced thing. You implement it if you want. And also, Nintendo is bringing out another game which no doubt will support it, and that is the I think it's called Mario Aces. It's basically the tennis game coming to the Switch. And that's coming out in spring 2018, and you just know a tennis game is going to have motion controls, so that's going to be fun. So my question to you, Jamil, is do you think in today's society, in today's gaming age, do you think it's actually possible, where applicable, do you think it's possible that motion controls can actually come back even after the whole waggle fest, which was the Wii, even after the Sony copying Nintendo and doing like their snow cone controllers, if you remember, you know, had better motion controls. Even Microsoft jumped in with the whole Kinect thing, and we know the end story of those. Sony has dropped the snow cones. Microsoft doesn't even have the Kinect bundled with their consoles anymore. So, doesn't even happen. What do you think, mate?
Well,
motion
look,
controls, gaming.
Yeah, okay. With motion controls, I think it's a gimmick. And it's, if you do it, it's a gimmick, and it's why the Wii and the Wii U weren't as successful as they could be, because ultimately, motion controls, when you're not doing VR, isn't part of the experience. Okay, the problem is that they're cool, but they have their place. Like, say for example, if you're going to do a motion control game or have a game that featured motion control, you would want to do it sparingly and do it in a way where the gameplay mechanic ties in with everything you're doing. Like, say for example, I remember we were talking about this recently, where I said to you, imagine you're playing a game, like say like Kingdom Come or something like that, and you're in a sword fight with someone, and there's a section where like the game goes into bullet time and slows down as a sword is coming like whoosh, down towards you, and then you know, you twist your Wii controller, sorry, your Switch controller, and you angle a sword, and you go BAM, and you have this epic sword clash, you know, and then the sword fight returns to normal. You go back to pressing buttons, and another sword fight comes in. You go, and you swing your controllers around. You bring your sword around, and boom, you clash it again, and you get into this epic sword fight with someone. That's a cool way to use motion controls in a way that won't distract from the experience. I think the problem and the reason why the Wii and the Wii U fell over in the end with the motion control stuff was because if that is your core mechanic, right, that it's just not going to hold up, especially now against VR. Because when you're in VR and you've got the, you know, your little hand controllers, right, and you're moving things around, it is so seamless. It's so naturally part of the experience. But for a console, it's just not. And so they have to be really careful and really deliberate and sparing as to how they use it. If they get that right, it'll be awesome.
Okay. All right, look, that's fair enough. I'm on the other end of the scale. When I when I had the Wii, like, I absolutely loved the motion controls. Where it worked, I felt there was a lot of games which it was horrible in, but when it did work, I felt it was great. Now, I agree with you with with VR, motion controls will add an extra layer of immersion. Absolutely. I do feel that when implemented correctly, I think motion controls can enhance any sort of game, but you have to be smart about it, and it needs to be an option. And I think Doom hits this right on the head perfectly. So it's like those that only want buttons, cool, play it with buttons. Play with the Joy-Cons, play with the Pro Controller if you want the real traditional setup. And for those like me who actually see a lot of promise with motion controls, you can flip the option on. So if you can flip it on and off, I think that's great. I think it would be a little confusing, as you said, with Kingdom Come, if there's segments that have motion controls, just because one, you'll be playing the majority of the game with the buttons, and then all of a sudden you'd be expected to do like a motion. You're probably not ready for it, but that's just my personal opinion. I think it can be blended, you know. I don't see motion controls making a huge comeback like every game will have it. And to be honest, I think even few developers understand what makes it good in the first place. Because I remember on the Wii, sometimes you'd get a motion control game, which was actually pretty good, you know? And you're like, oh yes, the opportunities which this console brings is being fulfilled. And then they would release a sequel to that said game, and then the motion controls would be horrible. And it would be like, did you not understand what made your first game good in the first place? Like, did you just wing it and it worked out? Because you've done a follow-up and it's just not any good. Oh, well, I guess it's just how it is sometimes. But personally, I'm happy to see that the technology there is an option. I don't think it would ever be good if it's forced. But yeah, I know, I think it's cool. I like every how can I put this? I understand that certain things are gimmicks, and yeah, even motion controls to an extent can fall under there, but I just always feel like there's a right way of doing things, and I just think they never really got it with motion controls, apart from a few exceptions. So yeah, I'm at like the Mario Tennis game, which is coming out. When I heard about that, to be honest, I wasn't really that interested. I like Mario, I like tennis, I've never been big on the games, but then one night I was sitting down and I realized that, oh hey, this will probably have motion controls. All of a sudden my interest just skyrocketed. I went from nothing to something, because I am a little bit of a sucker for that sort of thing. Anyways, I think we'll wrap things there, buddy. Thanks so much for joining me. Glad you could find the time to join. Anyway, guys, you've been listening to Game In My Whole Life. This has been Podcast 9. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you in about a week's time.
Okay.
Until then, happy gaming.
Take care, everyone. Bye-bye.